Hi there. Welcome back to Advanced STL Part 4. I'm Stefan T. Lowid, Visual C++ Libraries developer. And today I'm going to be talking about R-value references, including R-value references version 2.1, and also some interesting things in the associative containers, for example, set, but also map. So this should be pretty interesting. First, I assume that you're familiar with R-value references, how they were added in VC10 to enable both move semantics and perfect forwarding. In the intro series, I talked about move semantics, whereas perfect forwarding is more for experts. This is seen in functions like makeShared that want to take an arbitrary number of arbitrary arguments and pass them along or forward them to some other function like a constructor without modifying their constness or whether they're an L value or an R value. And this has been used extensively throughout the STL. So the great thing about R value references is that they enable both move semantics and perfect forwarding, these completely different features. And yet, move semantics and perfect forwarding interact nicely. If you've got a perfect forwarding function, you can forward R values, for example, temporaries of type std string. That's a very common R value. And the destination, the function that's eventually called after possibly multiple levels of perfect forwarding, if that's move aware and is willing to move from an R value, then the R valueness of the original argument will have been preserved along all of those levels of perfect forwarding. So even though perfect forwarding doesn't inherently activate move semantics, it'll play nice if move semantics is to be used. And this is used throughout the STL. In VC10. But there's an interesting twist that I've encountered recently and that other people have been encountering, so I thought I would explain it. Here's a sort of hello world example of using R-value references with the STL. Of course, I'm careful to include all the headers that I need. Since we know where everything lives, I'm going to minimize this. Now, we've got a vector string, and I've got a string s here. That's an L value. It's a named variable. And I'm going to push it back into the vector. And then I'm going to use std::move to push that back into the vector as well, moving from the source. This should not be terribly surprising if you're familiar with the STL. Let's just see what this looks like. So let's compile and run. Step into the pushback here. So in VC10, when we rewrote the STL, of course, we sprinkled R-value references over everything. And we've got a couple overloads of vector pushback. The one here, pushback takes const t ref, where t is the element type of the vector. And because this is taking a const l value reference, it's going to have to copy. So there's a bunch of levels here. I can quickly step through here. We have a special condition to see if you're writing v, if you write v pushback, the standard actually allows you to say v pushback v0. Which is very interesting because you're taking an element of the vector and pushing it back into itself. We have to special case this in order to make sure that it works. So here we've got inside, which asks, does this live inside the vector itself? And if so, we've special cased it. Otherwise, we're just pushing back some external element. So we're eventually going to construct the value in place. So let me step down there. You can see our iterator debugging machinery, which we looked at last episode. Then when we step into consval, construct a value, we'll go to the allocator and forward it along. In this case, the source is a const l value, though. So let's step in and out of forward and into construct. Here we've got placement new, because vector allocates a big chunk of memory and then has to construct elements within. Vector actually does not use operator bracket, doesn't use operator new ... instead it uses operator new through std allocator and then placement new to construct elements in place. And here is where, here's forward, we eventually, and I've put a breakpoint here, invoke basic strings copy constructor. And that's as expected because our source was an L value. So let's step out of all of this stuff and see what happens when we say v pushback move s. Here the source is a modifiable R value, so we expect move semantics to be activated. And after bouncing in and out of std move, we see that we've hit the overload pushback tref val, which takes a modifiable R value, and it knows that it can steal from whatever the source is. Oh, I stepped too far. Let me go back up the call stack. Oh, that's the reserve. I don't want that. Out. That's right. It had to reallocate because I had already pushed one element in there. Here's the one that I wanted, consval. And our val here is an R value reference. Now, you'll notice we're doing something a little squirrely here. This is the move version of pushback. So internally, we really should say std move val. Instead, we do this thing where we say forward t val. This actually has the same effect, but I don't recommend that you do it. In fact, at some point, I'd like to clean up our source code and stop doing this using forward when we really should be using move. But this is equivalent, in effect, to a move. So we'll go into this cons val here. And we hit basic strings move constructor. So we have moved s into the vector. Everything is as expected. Awesome. So that's R value references. Now for the advanced twist. So in my blog article, which you may have seen, I explained R value references v1, as it later became known. When they were originally specified in the standard, in the working paper, R value references were willing to bind to L values. They didn't prefer to do so. So if you had overloading between one function taking a const tref and, actually I should say const xref, x is not a template argument, I don't want to get into perfect forwarding, and you've got an overload taking xrefref, clean this up a bit. Then in R value references v1, L values would prefer to bind to this one, and R values would prefer to bind to this one. Everything was cool. The problem is that if anything, for any reason, disabled this L value reference overload, then both L values and R values would end up binding to this R value reference, because the R value reference was willing to bind to L values even though it didn't prefer. This was originally found through concepts before they were removed from the C++OX working paper, but other things like Sophiny or possibly other template machinery could prevent this overload from being viable. So this is recognized as actually a fairly serious safety problem. And they changed the specification to what I've been calling R value references v2. And in v2, R value references hate binding to L values. They hate it so much that they will refuse to do so with a compiler error. So when you've got an overload set between a const L value reference and a modifiable R value reference, if for some reason the overload taking a const L value reference becomes non-viable, then if you try to pass an L value to the overload taking an R value reference, it'll fail to compile. That's good because you won't be stealing from L values and sucking their brains out and leaving things null randomly. Now, that was R value references v2, and fortunately that happened in time for us to implement it in VC10 RTM. So unless you were following along with the community technology preview and beta 1, you never had to deal with R value references v1. So that's fun. The problem is that the specification of the C++OX working paper has continued to evolve. Now, let's go back to what I've been leading up to. We've got a vector string here. String is implicitly constructible from a string literal. So what if we say v pushback kitty and just put a string literal here like this. Now, what are we doing here? We know that we've got a vector string. Element type is std string. It's got these two overloads that we've already seen, pushback taking const string ref and pushback taking string ref ref. Now, here our source is a string literal, const char star. It's really a const array of 6 characters. We can think of it as const char star. And this is going to have to create a temporary std string. So we would expect, as reasonable programmers, that this would choose the overload pushback string ref ref. Well, let's see what happens. So we're about to execute v pushback with the string literal kitty. And we're hoping that this is going to construct a temporary std string. It's definitely going to have to. And then move that std string into the vector. There's no reason to make a copy because it's temporary. Our value references, their whole point is to save us from that sort of unnecessary work. So let's step in. And here we're constructing the temporary std string from a const char star, as expected. Jump out, jump back in, push back. This pushback is taking const string ref. This is going to make a copy, even though we just saw that we made a temporary. So we're making the temporary std string and then copy constructing it into our vector. In this case, it's pretty cheap because the string is so small, we're activating the small string optimization. But if the string literal were longer than 16 characters, we would actually be doing an unnecessary dynamic memory allocation. So what's going on here? Is the debugger lying to us? No, the debugger is accurate. In fact, as specified in our value references v2, this was required. Let me go back to main here. So what is going on here? So when I say v pushback kitty, we've got two overloads, pushback taking const string ref. It takes const tie ref, but I'm just going to substitute that in. And then pushback taking string ref ref. It can often be somewhat confusing as to why the compiler, the language, is deciding to call a particular function. But really, what the standard or working paper does is simply apply a series of rules or games, as I like to think of them, and then whatever they decide, it goes with. In order, it does unqualify or name lookup, often unqualified, sometimes argument dependent. It'll do template argument deduction and then overload resolution, and at the end, it'll do access control. And there's other steps that go in there. But they follow in a particular order. So while you can't debug into why the compiler is choosing a particular overload, unless you're a compiler dev, which I'm not, if you're familiar with the rules as an advanced programmer, you can basically do the chain of rules in your head and figure out, oh, that's why the compiler is choosing this. Of course, sometimes it's so complicated you have to go look at the standard or consult an expert. So what's going on here is the compiler sees this, and the type of this, I'll write its real type out, is const char, and its array of 5 characters and a null terminator, 6. This will decay pretty quickly to const char star, but it's really an array. And the compiler sees these two overloads, and it's trying to figure out, okay, which one do I call? Can I even call this? Because if I said, like, v pushback 5, that can't compile, because I can't implicitly construct a string from 5. However, I can from kitty, a string literal, which is good. So it sees this, and it says, OK, which overloads are viable, meaning which ones could possibly be called? And then once it figures out which ones could possibly be called, it'll basically have them fight in a duel to the death. And one and only one will have to emerge the victor. If two overloads are equally good, then the compiler will throw its hands up, declare an ambiguity, and say, I don't know which one you want me to call, and emit a deterministic error. But here, everything is compiling, and yet the wrong overload is being selected. Why is that? Well, we know that this overload is certainly viable because we can take this const char 6 and then construct a std string. I'm going to omit all that basic string stuff. And this is a temporary, so this would be a modifiable R value. And we know that if we take a const char 6 and construct a temporary R value std string, that we can go bind a const L value reference to it. That's what we've been doing in C++ 03, 98, for ages and ages. So that's certainly viable. It's all good. Now, what about this one, which is the one we actually want to call? Well, we know that we can take a const char 6 and construct a temporary std string out of it, and we would hope that this string ref, modifiable R value reference, would bind to the temporary. R value references v2 says, hey, you know, R value references in fact can only bind to temporaries. Here's the problem. the way that it was specified, it didn't take into account conversions. When the compiler and the language look at this, what they see is an R value reference, so string refref, and the source is an L value. Why is it an L value? Well, the original type of this thing, which is consecure 6, this is an L value. Unlike all other literals like 5, 17, 29, floating point, like 3.14, string literals are L values because they talk about an array of characters that's sitting somewhere in read-only memory. You can get a pointer into their guts and read individual characters. So the source here, this is an L value. Actually, I have another color. So even though we would convert it into an R value temporary, the way that the R value reference V2 rules were specified is that they see an R value reference, they see that the source is an L value, and it says, whoa, I will refuse to bind to this. The rules are too harsh. So this overload is removed from consideration, it's non-viable, and the pushback constring ref is the only overload available that could possibly be called. So it wins by default, the two sweetest words in the English language, and we end up having move semantics deactivated. So this is somewhat less than desirable. Now, your code, of course, will continue to compile. In fact, it will perform the same as in C++ 9803, so it's certainly not a regression, but it's less than ideal. Now, fortunately, as the C++ OX working paper has continued to evolve, this has been fixed. Of course, it had to be fixed after we shipped Visual Studio 2010, so it's not yet implemented in anything you have. But the specification in the working paper has been updated to what I'm calling R-value references version 2.1. And essentially what this does is it takes this situation where implicit conversions are involved and it does the right thing. Instead of looking naively at the L-valueness or R-valueness of the original argument, it will look at the L-valueness or R-valueness of any temporary that might have been produced during a conversion. It's still implementing the version 2 rules of not letting R-value references directly bind to L values of the same type. That's still horrible, still completely forbidden. But when a conversion in this case is produced, then it's willing to create a temporary and then bind the R-value reference to the temporary. And this has already been implemented in VC11. Yay, really a bug fix sort of thing. And except in this case, the bug is coming from the C++ OX working paper. Awesome. So when you compile with VC11 in the future, this sort of code will be more efficient. So that's awesome. So that's R-value references V2.1. With the time that I have remaining, let's take a look inside the associative container set. So I'm going to wipe out this code, and let's have a set of string and call it meow. It's always a good variable name. And let's have an actual string, and I'm going to call it LV stuff. And let's have a const string C and other stuff. Yep. Now I'm going to insert some stuff into the set. And let's start off by inserting C. I should have declared them in the other order. I'm very obsessive. I like everything to follow predictable patterns. Then let's meow insert LV. I could use R values here, but this will be sufficient to demonstrate what I want. Okay, I'm going to go fix this. Ah, much better. And because it's just a demo, I'm not going to actually do anything with the set. So let us step into here. Now, this has nothing to do with R value references version 2.1. This is actually the standard library's fault. And this is an interesting problem that I had looked into in VC10. So let's see what this does. We're going to insert a couple of std strings into the set string and see what happens underneath the covers. Something very interesting is happening here. So let's compile and run. Oh, I don't want to edit continue. Stop. Okay. And let's step into meow insert C. So insert is going to take some argument and see if that value already exists in the set string, because this is a unique set, it's not a multi-set. And if that value already exists, then the insert will not happen. But if the set doesn't yet contain that value, then it will create a new node, stick that node into the balanced binary tree. I can actually sketch that out here. As you know, map and set are implemented, really mandated by the standard, with balanced binary trees. In our implementation, they happen to be red-black trees. That's a particular data structure that I hope never have to implement myself from scratch. And it looks like you got a root node, and then a bunch of stuff, and then you've got some value like meow. And of course, each node contains a value. It contains a left child pointer. It contains a right child pointer. And it contains a parent pointer. So the node ends up containing three raw pointers in addition to the value. So it has, of course, some overhead. Vector is the best at space consumption. And let's step into this insert call here and see what happens. So I have jumped over to Xtree, implementation detail in our STL implementation is that because set, multi-set, map, and multi-map all look really, really the same. They have all the same complexity guarantees. Their members are almost virtually identical. They only differ on their value types and a couple other things. We actually have them all derived from a single class called underscore tree, and we customize them with this traits, their internal traits, tset traits, tmap traits, things like that, to make this base class behave slightly differently depending on whether it's a set or a map. And many member functions are simply implemented in this base class. So to you, they look like they're just members of set, but they're really being implemented in the tree class, which is in our internal header file Xtree. If I scroll up here, maybe I can find where it is. Here we go. So here's class tree. Actually, I can show you something real quick here. In VC9 and earlier, we implemented C++9803's rules that allowed set iterators to be modifiable. So you could take a set iterator and go modify what it pointed to. That's actually really bad because you got this balanced binary tree here and it has certain invariants. For example, the left child has to be less than the right child. I believe that's one of them. If you go modify elements in place in a set, you can break the data structure's invariants. That is extremely bad. What C++9803 said is, don't do that. You can modify them as long as you don't actually corrupt the data structure by changing the relative ordering. C++OX rightly decided that that was thought crime. Horrible. So it says that set elements are now immutable. You cannot modify them. You'll have to resort to something like a const cas or a layer of indirection or a mutable data member if you actually want to get away with such shenanigans. And the way that we've implemented this in VC10 is through a little bit of metaprogramming. When we have a set or a multi-set, then the key type is the same as the value type that the set is actually storing. Whereas when you have a map or a multi-map, the key type, k, is different from the value type pair const kv. Map has already applied constants to its value type. So we say conditional, if the key type is the same as the value type, then we know that this base class has been given a set or multi-set traits. And in that case, its iterator type def is going to be identical, physically identical, to the const iterator. This is permitted but not required by the standard, and this is the easiest way for us to enforce constness of the set elements. So this was actually the subject of a breaking change blog post, and whoa, I do not want to hack that header. So that's what's going on there, a little bit of logic that I thought would be interesting. Let's go back to this insert call here that is on tree and see what's happening. So this is taking const value type ref, in this case, const string ref, and it says we've got limited comments in our STL sources. We're going to try to insert this value that's been given to us here. We've got visualizer saying it contains other stuff. And if it already exists in the set, then we don't want to do anything. So if we step into this helper call here, it's right below here. This is all that red-black binary tree stuff. Pretty complicated. It's got a bunch of helper functions. and iterator debug logic in here, of course. But essentially, we're going to compare this value, val, that has been given to us with the elements in the set, and we're going to walk down this binary tree. We're going to look at the root. There's a sentinel node here I'm not going to get into. And we're going to see, okay, if we're inserting my string, I'm just going to say blah, does it belong to the left or the right here? And it's going to continuously compare the given string val against each note. And it's going to walk the tree, and it's going to see, oh, I got to go left here, right here, and eventually find either, draw a node here, either the spot that it should be inserted and does not already exist yet, or it's going to find that it already contains a node that is considered equivalent, according to the comparator, to whatever is being given, in which case it does not want to insert. So this is all good and efficient. We'll only, in this overload, we'll only allocate a node if we find that it doesn't already exist in the tree. If it already does exist in the tree, then we will not dynamically allocate a node. This is good. This is, in fact, what we did in C++98.03, so, or VC9. Now, let me step out of this, and in this very similar call immediately below, oh, I'm stepping in. Oh, no. There we go. So we just saw what happens if we try to insert a const L value. Here I physically made a const string C and then tried to insert it. Now, what if I have a modifiable L value and I try to insert that? So there's no move semantics going on here. Both C and LV are L values. One is const, one is modifiable, but either way, without a std move, I can't steal from them. So none of that is involved here. However, it turns out that meow insert LV is going to be less efficient. And let's see why. So let's step into this. And here we're hitting a different overload of insert on Xtree. And this is a perfect forwarder. Typically in the STL, in ARM implementation, when we've got a perfect forwarding function, we'll say val tie to distinguish it from any tie template argument that might belong to the class itself. So often, but not always, when you see a val tie, it's going to be a perfect forwarder. So this is a perfect forwarding insert, and it's going to take the argument type, which may differ. It could be, for example, a string literal, like we just saw, and attempt to insert it into the set. Now, we can actually see the badness, performance badness, immediately below here. It says, let's try to insert a node with the given value. And what are we doing? Well, we take val, we forward it along, because, of course, we have to restore its constness and L-valueness, R-valueness, because of perfect forwarding. And we'll call this helper function byNode. That does exactly what it says on the box. It buys us a node, and where by means dynamically allocate. So here again, here's a helper function in Xtree. We call this byNode, and then we're going to go actually give it a value. And here we're going to go to the allocator and say, hey, I want you to allocate the size of a node for me. And what we're doing here, let me erase some of this, is the user, in this case me, is starting with this val, and this is a modifiable string, std string. We are going to this byNode function and allocating a new node. And this is going to actually copy, because the source is an L value, the string into this node. The copy is itself bad enough for performance, but the fact that we have to dynamically allocate memory for a node is very interesting. Then we're going to go look at the tree. So if it does not yet exist in the tree, then that's awesome. We'll take this new node and we'll just glue it into the tree and link up the left, right, child, and parent pointers. Everything is good. But what if the string's content already exists in our tree? This could be a set or a multi-set or so forth. In that case, we do not want to perform the insertion, so we will destroy the node that we just allocated and then return, I believe, false, saying that the insertion was not performed. That is not good. We did not only a value copy into this node, but we had to dynamically allocate the node and then deallocate it, all for doing no work other than simply traversing login pointers and then finding, oh, the thing already exists, and of course performing comparisons along the way. So if you've got a program that is doing maybe hundreds of thousands of insertions per second and is often encountering duplicate elements where it's not going to perform the insertion And in fact, I may have misspoken. Of course, this will never happen for multi-set, where it can always insert, but for std set, it enforces uniqueness. In that case, you could be allocating and deallocating nodes and throwing them on the floor, which is no good at all. So, in fact, the problem here is a little deeper than this. If you go to the standard, to the Batcave, to the standard, or working paper, you'll actually see that std set is not supposed to have a perfect forwarding insert at all. It turns out we were a little overzealous when we added R-value references to the STL, and this perfect forwarding insert not only snuck into std set, but as I recall, other containers, including, I think, even vector. In fact, perfect forwarding inserts are only supposed to exist, I'm working from memory here, on like map, and that's like it, maybe multi-map as well. Whereas set and the other containers are supposed to have non-perfect forwarding insertion functions that are overloaded on L-valueness and R-valueness, but they don't do all this perfect forwarding. So we've gone and fixed that up in VC11 already. This was actually months and months ago. So the perfect forwarding overloads only exist on the containers that are supposed to have them. This fixes some very obscure problems as well. And what does this mean for this dynamic allocation thing that can impact performance? Well, there's five cases here. Suppose I've got a container. In this case, let's say we're starting with a map because I think that has the perfect forwarding insert. And its value type, so pair, const k, v, let's just call that x. So the source could be a modifiable L value, or it could be a const L value of type x. It could be a modifiable R value, or it could be a const R value. I believe I've mentioned that const R values are extremely strange and should never usually appear in code, but they can be created. And then you could just have some arbitrary argument, let's call it A, that is convertible to X, but we're simply saying insert A and expecting the insert to perfect forward it along. So what happens in VC11 is, actually let me describe what happens in VC10 as we just saw. In VC10, only if you start with a const L value of type X, as we saw, this will do the efficient thing. It will avoid creating a node if it already exists in the tree, because it says, oh, I've got a const L value here. I can just compare whatever you've given me directly to nodes in the tree without creating a node or not. But for anything else here, as we're seeing, modifiable L values or R values of any type, we'll hit that other overload that will allocate and deallocate a node if it already exists in the container. That's no good at all. In VC11, we have fixed this, yay. And what goes on here is that if you start with the element type of the container, in this case, if it's a map, pair, const kv, then in all of these cases, we will avoid allocating a node only to deallocate it if it doesn't already exist. We'll take the value that you give us and compare it in place. Everything's good. Now, in the case when you start with a type that is different from the element type in the container, we actually have to construct a node. We have to construct that node, convert the A into an X, because how else can we compare it to elements in the tree which are of type X? Our operator, we can only use it to compare two X's. And because the act of converting an A into an X may steal resources from the A, remember it's perfect forwarding, we can only do it once. We can't like convert it once into some temporary and then now we have to insert it and then do it again. So we actually must allocate a node only to throw it away. Fortunately, this was something that happens pretty rarely. Like I said, it's only on map. So VC11 will be as efficient as possible while still conforming to the standard. So I've run out of time. Hope this was interesting. Peek into some of the performance problems when you're working on the bleeding edge of the STL here. Of course, there's ways to avoid all of these issues by manually constructing name variables and std moving them along. If you have any other ideas for subjects you'd like to see in advanced STL series, then post them in the comments. Otherwise, I'll see you next time.